Welcome to Wide Sources Webinar, a lesson in open source vulnerability management. My name is Zev Brodsky, and I am the community manager at Wide Source Software. Joining me today is Gal Yaffe, the general manager of Europe and Asia Pacific. During today's webinar, we will be discussing open source security and open source vulnerabilities management. Throughout the webinar, if you have any questions, please leave in the chat box, and we will answer them at the end of the webinar.
Thank you, Zev. Hi, everyone, and thanks for joining. You know, we at White Source, as market leaders, you know, we keep pushing and educating the market and talk about the criticality and the importance of open source security. And, you know, probably the Equifax amazing data breach story demonstrates in the best possible way why this is something that just, you know, cannot be ignored. So today on the agenda, we're basically going to go through the case study, Equifax, talk a little bit about open source security in general, and then try to understand, come up with some lessons, you know, from that story. So, you know, before we go through the actual incidents and what happened and what went down and when, you know, let me introduce the two main actors in this story. Obviously, first one is the company, Equifax. Just in case any of you don't know who they are, this is a consumer credit card reporting company. They collect lots of sensitive information about hundreds of millions of individuals as well as companies. And, you know, between the two, the three big companies in the U.S. that actually are providing those services, they are the oldest one, almost 10,000 employees, publicly traded in the New York Stock Exchange with more than $3 billion in revenue last year. So, you know, huge company, well-known. And specifically one that is in the financial services and sensitive information data. So that's Equifax. And then the second actor, which plays obviously a huge part in that, is an open source component. It's called Apache Struts. That's a free open source framework usually used to develop and build nice and elegant web applications. Two things, maybe two facts about that open source framework. Number one, it's very, very common, heavily adopted, and in a few slides I'll show you some statistics about how many customers are actually using that. The second thing that I want to highlight, which is very relevant to that case study, is, you know, as much as that framework is commonly used and well known, it's very, very vulnerable. If you look for security information for Struts 2, you would find almost 70 different security vulnerabilities listed out there. You can see here in the screenshot on the right hand side, you know, that vulnerability number 8, that's actually the one that caused this tremendous story to unfold. In fact, as you can see, it got the highest score, 10 out of 10. So all in all, again, a very popular but vulnerable component. So now we can actually switch gears and look at exactly what, you know, what went down and what was the sequence of events. So obviously we're talking about a very recent incident, okay? This is, you know, it started in March, so about 8 months ago. And at the beginning of March, around March 7, you know, what's called exploit code was running around the internet. There was some rumors within the hacking community about a very vulnerable component that has an exploit code attached to it. Now, that there was nothing official at that point. It was all over the dark net. You know, it was basically going out in the wild. But it took only 3 days before the public CVE was put out there in NVD, and if you don't know what NVD is, I'll explain in a second, and then a patch was available the same day. So when an open source vulnerability is made public, there are a few commonly used repositories out there. NVD is the National Vulnerability Database. It's maintained by the federal government in the US. And again, just to recap, it took only 3 days before the rumor started and until a public vulnerability was put in NVD. Now, not only that, in the same day, on March 10th, when the CVE got published, in fact, a patch was available. So again, in the same day, a CVE got published, but the patch was available for anybody to get protected. So that's the beginning of March. Now, it took 2 months, actually, before Equifax were under attack. So the attack only started in mid-May. That means that they had 2 complete months to patch and get protected. Now, apparently, obviously, they didn't do it, but probably they didn't even know they have an issue. So the attack started on around mid-May and actually lasted for almost 10 weeks. It was only until July 29th when Equifax discovered that they were under attack for the last two plus months and sensitive information was stolen from their data centers. So again, 2 months to patch and another 10 weeks for the actual attack to take place. From that point, by the way, they, you know, it took another 6 weeks for them to actually, go out and announce that sensitive information was stolen. So that's, you know, bad handling on their side as well. So if we want to recap, you know, the facts and see how much time they had to respond. So again, between 8 and 9 weeks to patch, the attack actually lasted for 10 weeks and then another 6 weeks between the detection of the actual vulnerability in the data breach and the notice. Okay, obviously publicly traded company, so you know, there's no good explanation to wait so long, but regardless, enough time to respond. So some of the facts and what was discovered when this whole data breach was uncovered. So obviously they had to admit that personal information got stolen. And, you know, when we say sensitive information, we talk about last name and first name, last name, date of birth, credit card information, home address, social security numbers, obviously. You know, all of these data points were stolen from their data centers. Almost 150 million records, so individuals, were affected by this huge data breach. So we're talking about roughly half the population of the U.S. And even today, you know, already today, this is classified and categorized as the worst and biggest data breach ever in the history. So it really doesn't get any worse than that. And, you know, just to realize why this is so bad and what could be done with that information that got stolen. So, you know, this is obviously identity theft, and I'm just listing some of the things that the thieves or anyone who would have access to this type of information can do with it, right? So they can open financial accounts, they can steal your benefits, they can get medical coverage or even, you know, steal your pension and so on and so forth, even apply for a job. They basically have your identity. And again, nearly 150 million people are now literally terrified because their information, their identity is out there for anyone who's basically, you know, willing to pay for that. So, you know, this is really, really doesn't get any worse than that. You know, some of the publications in the days after the announcement, and you can see some of it right here on the top right corner. At the beginning, we can see that Equifax CEO tried to put the entire blame on a single person for not applying a patch. Now, you know, obviously something, you know, that order of magnitude cannot be put on a single person, definitely not somebody who's junior. And it was short after that, the two top executives, the chief security officer and chief information officer, had to step down as the investigation continued. Eventually, you know, I guess as we all know, the CEO had to be replaced. And the stock completely crashed. We can see here 18.4%, but actually this was taken from today, and as we can see that it didn't rebound. In fact, it only got worse, and as of today, the impact is almost 25% down, which in the case of Equifax, a multi-billion company, is worth $4.17 billion in market cap. So this is a huge loss, and by the way, you know, it doesn't even mean that this is the end of the story. They could be liable for millions or tens of millions of damages. So, you know, just the impact is, you know, is second to none. Okay, so some statistics about adoption of Apache Struts. As we said, you know, that is the framework that is in the heart of that story. And as we said, it's very commonly used. In fact, 58% of the organizations out there are actually using any version of Struts, not necessarily version 2, the one that was exploited in this case, but 20% of the organizations out there are actually exposed to those two specific CVEs that, again, led to this amazing data breach. Now, maybe the most amazing data points is that only, in fact, less than 2% of the customers out there, of the organizations, are actually using the information that is available to them and applying the patch and get themselves on the latest Struts version. So even though this is such a huge story, you know, not enough organizations are actually applying the patch and getting themselves on the latest Struts version. So this is obviously unfortunate. Okay, so a few more data points to consider. That chart right here actually illustrates how fast the hackers react to this information, because obviously when something like that is made public, it's not only organizations and security officers and CISOs that are, you know, that get access to this information, it's also the hackers. And as you can see here, immediately after that CVE was made public, the number of exploit attempts basically jumped from 0 to almost 2,000 in one day. So the message here, the bottom line, is that those hackers do not wait. So if you really want to be protected, you have to react fast. Now, keep in mind, Equifax had 2 months to patch, right? So when we analyze the sequence of events, they had 2 months to patch, but nevertheless, you know, it's amazing to see how fast hackers respond to those events and how fast they try to write and exploit vulnerabilities. Obviously, you know, this is what they do for a living. Okay, so, you know, as much as this is unfortunate, you know, we're not obviously, you know, trying to say that, that open source, you know, is not an amazing thing. You know, we absolutely, you know, huge believers in open source, and obviously like everybody to embrace it. All the stats showed that the adoption rates for open source are just going and increasing over time. Even today, it's well beyond the 50% mark, meaning the majority of the code in any commercial application would actually be open source and not proprietary code that you know, any organization would write. But of course, you know, open source security is a huge topic that cannot be overlooked. Now, Equifax, again, is an amazing story, but it's not the first one, and it's probably not going to be the last one. You know, if you're familiar with previous breaches and open source very famous vulnerabilities, then you probably know Heartbleed or Shellshock, Stagefright, and so forth. So again, Equifax got all the headlines just because of this enormous impact. But, you know, it's just one example out of thousands of open source vulnerabilities that, you know, can be potentially exploited just like Equifax. So let me explain maybe in the next couple of minutes why actually protecting yourself and make sure your open source software is secured. Why is that so challenging? So two main reasons. First one, before your open source components can be protected or secured, you have to understand exactly what you're using, generating that bill of material, this open source inventory. And this is not an easy task to do for three main reasons. Number one, we're talking about hundreds of components per project, okay? So that's not something that, you know, you can manage manually. The second thing is that, you know, those transitive dependencies, meaning when a developer is downloading a specific open source component from the web, most likely that component will be dependent on tens or hundreds of other open source components. That's, you know, it makes it very, very difficult to track and monitor. And eventually, you know, if you will ask your developers to document and basically, you know, go through some manual process for every open source project they want to use, most likely they're not going to cooperate, because at the end of the day, you know, they hate documentation. All they want to do is write code. So you should enable them to do, you know, what they're paid to do, and make sure that documentation and other back office processes are managed in a fully automated and seamless way. The second point I want to make is once you figure out that inventory, tracking the vulnerabilities against your inventory is a very challenging task as well. The main reasons for that is the various and multiple data sources that actually consist of information out there. They're not structured. You can't just go out and query them in a very easy way. And you have to aggregate and consolidate the data. So we're talking about dozens of, security vulnerability databases, security advisories, bug trackers, and so forth. So just keep track of all of that data out there is very challenging. Now, even mapping between those vulnerabilities to your inventory is very, very difficult just because in many cases, you have to drill down into the description of the vulnerability, understand exactly under what conditions your code would be exposed to that. So that's not something that can be done easily. And of course, those dependencies as well, and they almost double or triple the level of effort required to do it effectively. All right, so approaching the last part of that presentation, the bottom line, as we said, that specific CV and the Equifax story is just one example. So the bad news is that there are thousands of open source vulnerabilities out there, but the good news, as we saw in that story, the open source community is very responsive and very fast to react. And as we saw here, in the same day that the vulnerability was made public, a patch was available for everybody, developed by the community. So the community is very fast to react, which is something that organizations have to embrace. However, if organizations would be slow to react, and we saw a few slides ago how fast the hackers can be, then having those patches available out there is just not going to help. So the overall solution has to be a combination of the right technology in place, but also a shift in everybody's mindset, especially when it comes to security management and that culture of never ignore alerts. Shift left is a concept that has been talked about multiple times. We basically want to enable the developers and give them access to that information, to those tools, so they can release secure code immediately. That specifically in every CI/CD pipeline, in every CI/CD implementation, that is actually even more important because every developer can commit code, can release code to production, so they have to have the right tools to be able to do it in a secure way. Now, when you get information about security vulnerabilities, obviously it's critical to also provide the information of how to fix it, how to remediate the issue, because just know that you have a problem, that's only half of the solution, but giving you instructions, clear instructions, what to do in order to resolve that, that goes a long way. Okay, so really last slide of the presentation today. Eventually, the solution has to be a combination of technology, process, and culture. Nobody thinks that it would happen to them, but I'm sure that Equifax didn't think that either. But it did hit them, and we saw how big the impact was. So when it comes to security management, it's not something that can be taken lightly. And as we saw, it's probably something that has to be done immediately, not something that is down there in the to-do list. These type of things actually get board level visibility. I'm even talking about, above the CEO level. This is super high priority. It's very critical. And if you want to avoid being the next Equifax, we strongly suggest that you seriously look into one of the solutions out there and put one in place, sooner rather than later. That's really the end of the presentation today. I think we're gonna open it up for questions if anybody on the line has anything that he would like to discuss.
We have a few questions. So Robert asks, you say most open source vulnerabilities have a fix available. How can I find the fix?
Okay, all right. So that's a good question. And in fact, this is true. So most vulnerabilities, as we said, the community is very responsible. So for for the most part, a fix would be available. But this is almost as hard as tracking those vulnerabilities, because exactly like the CV information, exactly like the vulnerability data that can be found out there in multiple data sources, the same thing applies for the actual fixes. So, it's not something that can be done manually. It can be found in bug trackers, in security advisories, in some cases in NVD. And again, it's just not something that can be done manually. So the only way to do it effectively would be to complement your solution with the technology that brings you those remediation advices, those fixes, right along with the vulnerability information. Again, the information is out there, but it's very, very challenging to bring it to your developers.
We have another question from Michael, who says, I use a static code solution to secure my software. Would this detect open source vulnerabilities?
All right, okay, so that's an interesting question, actually. The question is, if somebody is using any SaaS static code analysis solution in place, would that detect vulnerabilities in open source? The answer is, for the most part, no. The reason is, the technology and the underlying engine to find vulnerabilities in your own proprietary code versus in open source is completely different. In fact, most open source, and specifically in Java, like structs, is consumed as binary codes. So you don't even have, in most cases, the source code for that open source available. So by definition, any technology that is based on static code analysis would not detect vulnerabilities in binary components, right? So in that case, the answer is, absolutely not. It just won't work. But also beyond that, static code analysis solutions, they basically go through the code and they try to identify what they think is a security vulnerability, right? So those are suspected vulnerabilities. When it comes to open source, there's no need for that, right? The information is out there. Vulnerabilities are actually proven. And when that kind of information is made public, that's a confirmed vulnerability, right? So it's completely pointless to run any heuristics or any tools that would try to come up with vulnerabilities while the information was already validated by the community, confirmed, tested, and made public. So, you have to understand vulnerabilities in your own proprietary code and vulnerabilities in open source are two completely different beasts, and they have to be addressed separately because the technique to come up and uncover them is completely different.
Before we have one last question, is there any additional questions anyone taking part in the webinar? But for now, Whitney asks, how often do you update your vulnerability database?
Yeah, so that's, again, it's a good question because you probably saw the timeline, and I guess you wonder, okay, so how fast can you guys alert me if I'm exposed to something? So the answer is no less than a weekly basis. So on a weekly basis, all vulnerabilities and all repositories are getting scanned, the database is getting updated, and then customers are getting those alerts respectively. Now, in some cases, such as high-profile CVEs, like in that case, that received the highest score, it would be more frequent than weekly, because in those cases are immediately flagged, and our research and security team would immediately assess the information for those high-profile CVEs and update the information in real time. So again, high-profile CVEs, I would say within 1 or 2 days, and otherwise on a weekly basis.
Okay. There are no further questions at this time. So we want to, Gal and I, Zev, want to thank you, everyone, for taking part in our webinar. Our next webinar will be taking place on December 6th. So stay tuned. And if you want any more information, please visit www.whitesourcesoftware.com. And have a great day.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.